We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis from the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans continue to be undefeated. We are clearly going to win 100 games this year. And end up in the Eastern Conference Finals with the, or end up Eastern Conference Finals. How's that for stupid? End up in the finals with the Chicago Bulls, who are the other undefeated preseason team. Is this a valid preview of what's going to happen this year?
I think you kind of lowballed it there, because if you're counting the preseason, we could actually win 106 games. I believe you only said 100.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, so if you're thinking we're going to go 106, I want you to show me the six teams we lose to.
At the end of the season, Michael Jordan is going to be begging Anthony Davis to have mercy on his legacy.
I agree. No, I mean, we joke a little bit, and the slate gets wiped clean. Everybody goes back to 0-0. On October 30th, but it's hard not to be excited, especially really the first game that we're going to talk about since our last podcast, the Oklahoma City game at Tulsa. Crazy fans in Oklahoma excited for this game. I would say that the Thunder legitimately tried to win this game. I mean, Kevin Durant was a leader in minutes along with Anthony Davis as far as players who played in this game. They both got 32. The immortal Steven Adams, who the Thunder announcers were comparing to the likes of Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell by the time it was over. He got 34. But amongst the starters, KD got 32 minutes, took 20 shots. So I found this to be a legit win in a game in which I just there's so many positives to take away.
Yeah. Yeah, I personally thought the best part of this whole battle, though, was the immortal Hashim Thabeet, Greg Stiesma starting center combat.
Yeah, and then they wound up getting in a fight, and you know that old joke about why Greg Stiesma doesn't listen to rap, because he doesn't like the beat.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're starting off there early today. But came to fruition in this game. I mean, it was the two guys. Thabeet played 14 minutes, so did Stiesma. They combined for 3 points on zero field goals attempted and zero field goals made. It was a battle of two of the best centers that'll actually get minutes in the NBA.
Combined, they had 5 rebounds, though.
Mm.
And 11 fouls.
I mean, we will talk about a lot of positive things in this game, but so far, Steamsma has played about 18 minutes a game, getting 2 points per game and 3 rebounds per game. Monty said a little more than a week ago he's done nothing to lose his starting job, but more and more we see this Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis 4-5 rotation, and it's not horrendous, at least not yet in the preseason, defensively. Do you think that another bad game or two and Monty just might roll that way starting off the season, or do you think he's gonna give this Steamsma thing a couple of weeks?
I fully expect that Steamsma will start the season. I really do. But I also fully expect that it won't be very long before Jason Smith is starting in his place.
So you think if Steamsma gets pulled, we're going to see Jason Smith as the starting center or whatever you want to call him next to Anthony Davis?
Yeah, and I fully expect, I think we'll just see a slight uptick in Smith's minutes. I think once Steamsma has proven that this is what he is and you're not going to get much out of him, and you know, Jason Smith will take those starting minutes. He'll probably still only get like 22 a game instead of 18 a game. But I think he'll slip into that starting role. And the team will have Tyreke Evans and Ryan Anderson coming off the bench, possibly Morrow as well. Who knows how that's going to work out? I'm assuming he will be. That's a plenty of firepower for your bench. So having Jason Smith there when he could be significantly helping the defense of your starting unit over Steamsma, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually love the fact that Steamsma took 0 shots in this game. I don't mind that he's not scoring at all. The part that bothers me is that in 14 minutes, he only grabs 1 defensive rebound and he picks up 6 personal fouls. I don't see him starting throughout the season, but I go the other way. I see as Monty starting to get more comfortable with Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis, and now that, you know, he has guards on the perimeter that could kind of keep the penetration down, I think we're going to see, that would be a bold prediction from me, I think we will see more games with Ryan Anderson starting this year than Greg Steamsma.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with you, but it's possible.
All right, so let's get off the steamer and let's talk about some of the positives.
First I do have to say, Oklahoma City wasn't trying to win that game, but they were playing their players closer to their real eventual minutes than usual.
Yeah.
Because Durant would have played in the final 2 minutes if they were actually trying to win that
game.
Right,
yeah.
But on the reverse side, the Pelicans wouldn't have been running with the crew they had out there the past 2 minutes in the final 2 minutes of that game. The Pelicans didn't have their best players out there either.
Oh, right.
So,
yeah, I mean, combined, Drew Holiday and Gordon only got 46 minutes, and that's where I want to start. 21 minutes from Eric Gordon. You want to talk about point per minute. He scored 21 points in those 21 minutes on only 9 shots. I thought he was terrific in this game. He got to the line and he hit his spot up jumpers. Really, the only 2 mistakes I saw is when he did that thing that we hate, where 2 or 3 dribbles and a pull up jumper, he missed pretty badly. And then he also had a 3-on-1 break at one point where he tried to take it right at Durant and got a turnover off his own leg when he could have just easily dumped it to somebody trailing for a dunk. But other than that, almost every time he touched the ball, he made something very good happen for himself. I mean, he was a scorer in this game, didn't really make that many plays for others. But, you know, here we go with the if Eric Gordon is healthy. I mean, if we get this guy or 80-90% of the guy that we saw in this game for a reasonable amount of games this season, you know, you're looking at a vastly, vastly improved team.
Yeah. I mean, even like I had the same reaction to you that I'm sure that you did when you saw him do the dribble through his legs, pull up jumper. I was flabbergasted. But, you know, even like when he made that mistake, and I thought had the same thing, drop it for the trailer, but he took it right into Durant. I'm actually fine with that. He's being aggressive. He's trying to get fouls on the other guy. Go ahead and, I mean, if that's his role is just to attack and wreak havoc and force them to foul him, that is his best way of being efficient. I don't expect his shooting from deep to be amazing. I expect it to be better than average, but not amazing. So I want him attacking all the time. And, if we get some facsimile of this for a large portion of the games this year, that is just an explosive amount of scoring for the other team to try to take. And he is so clever on that first step at just getting just the guy on his hip and then forcing that. It kind of reminds me, this is kind of almost an insult to Eric Gordon, but kind of reminds me of how Kevin Martin used to do it all the time, where he would just manage to get that guy in a bad position and then take the little bump, which really isn't going to affect his shot attempt at all, but he's still going to get that guy off balance and make him pay. I'm enjoying it. I hope we get to see a lot of it.
Yeah, I think the free throws are huge because I don't think this is a team that shoots a very high percentage. I mean, I did an article the other day, and I'm looking at the history of the players on this team and the field goal percentage. I could see a scenario, honestly, now that Davis is taking more jump shots, where nobody on this team shoots 50% or better. And if so, it might only be Davis. And the Pelicans are a good three-point shooting team, but it's not like they're so tremendous that they're going to be able to shoot a lower-than-league average percentage but still be able to score at a high enough clip. The only way they really do that is if they could get to the free throw line, and make 20, 24 free throws a game. And I would say that the two guys who are most likely to do that are going to be Gordon and Tyreke Evans, and definitely going to need them healthy in order to, give this offense a chance night in and night out, because when your jumper's not falling, you've got to find a way to get easy buckets. And I don't know if there's anybody on this team who could really just get an easy bucket when they need it, but there are a couple of guys who could draw free throws.
Yeah. The only other guy, other than the two you mentioned, I expect to be drawing a large or a significant number of free throws is Davis. Davis has been pretty good when he's going to the basket at absorbing contact and getting those free throws. And if you have three guys who are slightly better than average for their position, you're going to have a pretty solid efficiency from the free throw line, especially since all three of those guys can knock it down. I mean, I guess we have Austin Rivers, who will probably draw a larger number than normal of free throws for his position, but I'm not sure I still want him doing that.
Yeah. I mean, in this game, this is a game that the Pelicans could have easily got blown out. I mean, Oklahoma City just came out of the gate on fire from three. I believe started 9 of 12.
Yeah.
And 7 of the 9, I consider decent defense. Not great defense, but, good enough defense to where it could have been a miss, and Oklahoma City was just happened to be hitting at the time. But really getting to the free throw line kept them in it. Ryan Anderson and we've seen this preseason, is he has these little stretches, these little 3 to 5 minute pocket stretches where he'll score 10 of his 18 points and in that, short amount of time, get the Pelicans back into a game. And I just, the fact that they were close enough at halftime when Oklahoma City was that hot was impressive. And I would say, with all that being said, the biggest thing that lingers in my mind after this game and actually during this game is, I know it's absolutely crazy to anybody who's listening to the podcast, but I'm ready right now. I'm buying in. I am buying stock in Al-Farouq Aminu. I finally believe.
Really?
I actually think he is going to make a pretty significant leap this season and give the Pelicans a very good starting small forward that will give them about 28 minutes a game of above average play at that position.
Wow. If I had told you were going to say that before these preseason games started, how much would you have bet me? Like, what odds would you have given
me? Before this preseason, I mean, I did a guest article for a fantasy sports website where they asked me, what Pelican could be a really big sleeper in fantasy this year. And I actually wrote Al-Farouq Aminu. I believed a little bit that perhaps with a team that's more up-tempo, he could actually make a little bit of a leap. Because if you remember at the beginning of last year, remember when he was shooting like 71% from the field, and people were starting to, get all frantic about, well, we turned down his $3.75 million option. What if, now he plays so well that he's going to earn a huge contract? I mean, that was a real thing at the beginning of last year, and it was because he was actually getting out in transition and running. So, I thought that would be possible. What I didn't think would be possible is the improvement on the jump shot that I've seen, and I don't ever expect it to be above average, but if it's just average, that is such a huge leap for him. And I also see the defense improving every game. I mean, Kevin Durant had 5 turnovers in the first half in this game, and I would say 80% of that was because of Aminu. And, even towards the end of the half, the Thunder were trying so hard to get Aminu off of Durant that they would just keep running these pick and rolls with Reggie Jackson to try to get Aminu off of Durant so he could isolate against Holiday or some of our other guards. And I don't know. I'm just finally a believer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been very good. I'm still not sure if I'm a believer yet, but I'm more inclined to believe he could be a very good piece than just a decent relief guy. You brought it up really quickly there. Durant, he exploded in the second half, and almost every one of the plays that got him going was him ISO'd against Holiday. Do you like the fact that they're switching so freely? Because that's really what was happening there. Was every time that pick and roll ran, the Pelicans didn't try to fight through the pick. They just switched. And B, Drew Holiday, can he guard bigger guys like Durant? I mean, no one's going to guard Durant that well, but do you think he can do that?
I mean, if you're talking about – it's such an anomaly. He's not a normal guy. If they're playing in a 7-game series – I'm sure Monty sits down with his coaches and comes up with something more complex than that. But if you're talking about, the Spurs running a similar pick and roll, would I be comfortable with Drew Holiday covering Kawhi Leonard, who is a very good player? Yeah, I would be. I mean, Drew Holiday made Durant, for the most part, take jumpers. I think a big reason why they switch on that is because if they don't, Durant just drives to the hole and picks up fouls on one of our bigs and gets to the free throw line. So theoretically, I'd rather him take a jumper than drive to the hole and knock down 2 free throws. So against a normal, everyday, small forward or guy bigger than him, I'd feel comfortable with Drew Holiday covering Paul George, for instance, who by most accounts is, the fourth best small forward in the league, depending on what you look at Carmelo as.
Right.
So most of them I would actually, for the most part, he made them take jump shots, and not many people are gonna stop Kevin Durant from hitting them.
Yeah, honestly, I really like the idea of switching. That's one of the things that made me happy about getting Drew Holiday. It's never been his offensive abilities. It's always been the fact that he would upgrade our defensive front so much better because he's so much more athletic than what we had before. And he's huge for a point guard. I'm pretty excited to see how that switching defense works, because if you can pull that off, you make your perimeter defense so much tighter. That's part of the reason why Atlanta had so much success and was a, decent defensive team. They didn't have any blindingly awesome defensive players, but they switched on everything because everybody they had was a sizable player. They had to have Joe Johnson at the point of attack switching off, and So if the Pelicans can pull that off, I'm pretty excited to see how that works out defensively.
Yeah, the guy I'm more worried about on that end would be Eric Gordon. If you're playing a team like Houston, and let's say, you know, Gordon switches off of Harden to cover somebody like Parsons, who would have a good 6 inches on him. I think that might be a little bit more difficult, but I think if you have a lineup like Drew, Tyreek, Aminu, and Davis out there, I think pretty much any four of those guys could switch. Mm-hmm. And
Jason Smith, throwing him in there, you got a nice five-man rotating group.
Yeah, yeah. I really think the potential is there for the defense. The offense, I would say, in preseason has looked much better than the defense so far, but I still think the defense really has the potential with all the length that the Pelicans could throw out there. And I would say, you know, obviously the center point of that is Anthony Davis. And people, you know, again, I know it's only preseason, but to me it was pretty significant. People always talk about closers on the offensive end. If they talk about a guy who's a closer, they're talking about a guy who could score or make jump shots. In both games that we've seen since the last podcast, Anthony Davis has closed out the game defensively. I mean, first, so there's 22 seconds left, and the Thunder are down by one. Reggie Jackson drives to the hole. Anthony Davis kind of fakes like he's going to pop out to Ibaka, and then comes back, bothers Jackson's shot so bad that it hits the side of the backboard. Anthony Davis grabs the rebound, makes 2 free throws. They're up 3. Then Reggie Jackson has the ball again. Austin Rivers is covering him. Anthony Davis's man comes to set a pick, and Anthony Davis and Austin Rivers actually switch. So isolated up top with a point guard who was lighting it up last year, towards the end of the year, in Reggie Jackson. Anthony Davis is one-on-one with the point guard, and he forces Jackson to take a three that's a little further out than the line. He misses badly. You know, Davis with great defense there. Austin Rivers gets the rebound and goes on to miss 2 free throws, which I think we could expect. Then the Thunder get the ball back one last time, and Anthony Davis blocks Jeremy Lamb's 3-pointer as he attempts to tie it. I mean, 3 possessions, 3 huge defensive plays by Anthony Davis. I mean, do you think, and we'll see again, he makes an even bigger play at the end of the Washington game to seal that game yesterday. Do you think there are such things as defensive closers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you need them. I mean, teams become predictable at the end of games. I mean, that's just the reality. Almost every team has their guy. They go to their guy, and pretty much it's maybe at most a pick and roll, but pretty much it's that guy ISOing. And if you know that, and you have a guy who's one of the best defenders in the league, you have an advantage in that situation. There's a reason why at the end of games people shoot like 38%. But with Anthony Davis roaming around out there, I mean, he's going to be a one-man havoc squad. And this is the thing about Anthony Davis. I watched that whole game, and I actually felt like Anthony Davis had a mediocre game. He had moments that were amazing, but all in all, I thought he struggled a little bit with Steven Adams at times, that Adams was kind of manhandling him in places, and he wasn't bad, but I was kind of like, oh, that's just an okay Anthony Davis game. And then I walked back, and you look at the box score, and, you know, 18.6 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He took 14 shots for those 18 points. That's a good line. So in my book already, a mediocre game from Anthony Davis is already a really good game. I mean, that's David West's average when he played for us.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll bring up, which I know fans have a lot of questions about, and I think the belief still is that if and when the Pelicans become contenders, this is going to be the team that they have to go through. We saw a couple possessions, and one I cannot get out of my mind, where Anthony Davis actually covered Kevin Durant. And on one of those possessions, it wasn't like Durant wasn't looking or he came
from the picked him clean.
He picked Kevin Durant clean, started a 3-on-2 break that resulted in a layup. Do you think that whether it's now or even, you know, years in the future, that for spot minutes, for a couple minutes here and there, Anthony Davis could actually cover Kevin Durant and do fairly good at doing it?
Yes, spot minutes. I wouldn't put him on him all the time, of course. But absolutely. There isn't a player in the game at the small forward or power forward position where I am not comfortable with Anthony Davis switching onto them and covering them. I think he can manage any of them as well as anybody else in the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's exciting. I mean, it's not like the Thunder really have a low post presence where you would be right. You would be killing your team to pull Anthony Davis out. What I would say is if you, the more you have Davis on the perimeter, the easier it is for somebody like Russell Westbrook to attack or something from the weak side if he's staying on Durant. But yeah, I think for minutes here and there, I think it's something where Durant is a guy that's impossible to stop, but can you make him have nights like he had in this game where it takes him 20 shots to score 25 points and he has 6 turnovers? I mean, that's basically right there. That's 26 possessions where he has the ball in his hands and he scores 25 points. And I would take that any day of the week. And, you know, you throw Aminu at him, you throw Davis at him, you make him take jump shots by putting Holiday in front of him and pestering the ball. I think the Pelicans have a lot of interesting things they could do. I think as Durant develops more of a low post game, you could throw Tyreke Evans at him to keep him out of the post. I think they have a lot of players who, you know, could play spot minutes on Durant here or there, give him different looks and, you know, make the game a little bit harder for the guy who's probably the best pure scorer in the NBA.
Yeah. Two questions I have for you about OKC, having watched them in this game. Steven Adams, when we were talking about draft people, he was the guy who came about as like our Myers Leonard, like from last year, like a guy who's kind of a joke. You still feel that way about him?
I mean, I never want to judge a guy based on one game. I mean, he had by far his best game so far against us, but his permanent stats, I mean, at the very least, in every one of the games he's played in so far, he's been able to hit the boards. He's picking up a ton of fouls. I mean, he has in his last four games alone, he has 20 fouls in about 80 minutes. So, I mean, he's a foul per every 4 minutes type of guy, which is crazy. But, you know, you obviously guys usually have their highest foul rates at the beginning of their careers. I think he has better pedigree than Myers Leonard. I mean, he's a guy that early on was considered a top five pick type of candidate where Leonard just shot almost out of nowhere because of the combine. If I had to say between the two, I think Steven Adams has a slightly better career just because I think he knows more of who he is. I think at the very least he'll be a solid rebounder and a guy with better touch than Leonard around the basket.
It wouldn't shock me if Steven Adams' ceiling was Sam D'Alembert. He's 20 years old. He's making a lot of stupid fouls. I mean, he could even be like, what's the power forward up in Toronto?
Johnson. Amir Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he could have, I would not be shocked if he had a career like his, where he came out, he did the dirty work rebounding, probably fouled a little more often than he should, blocked a few shots, and yeah, 10 points is probably his ceiling as an average. But, I mean, that's way better than I thought he was going to be. I really thought he was like the next Patrick O'Brien or the next, you know, Mohamed Sean, just busts. Hilton Armstrong, that kind of player.
Yeah, and I mean, you always got to remember the situation the guy goes to as well. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot. I don't think Sair Sene or whatever would have been a decent player anywhere, but, you know, playing with Kevin Durant is going to draw so much attention. I mean, Michael Jordan made Bill Wennington, Will Perdue, and gosh, how am I forgetting the third guy in the trio of
Luke Longley
look like solid NBA players. So yeah, I think Steven Adams is in a decent enough situation where if he is going to be solid at all, you know, he's in the right spot with an organization that really knows how to develop young players and on a team that has, you know, enough guys drawing attention. And as far as the team itself, I'm sure they cannot wait to get rid of Kendrick Perkins soon enough. So, and last point is, he really has a guy who he could look to, you know, to model his game after in Nick Collison that he could learn from every day. So I think he's in a position to do better than some other guys who had similar bust potential.
Right. The other guy I wanted to ask you about, Ibaka. So Ibaka got a really big contract from the Thunder. He's, you know, one of the guys who's getting lots of votes for Defensive Player of the Year. He's, do you see a two-way player in Ibaka? Or is he really just kind of limited to the defensive end?
See, I actually go the other way. I think he is becoming far more skilled on the offensive end, but I think it's making him a worse offensive player. He, in that San Antonio series a couple of years ago, when they beat them and went to the finals, he had a game where he was just hitting every mid-range jumper. I want to say he went something like 11 for 11 or 11 for 12. In one of those games, it was basically the turning point. I think it was game 5 in San Antonio. And since then, it seems like he's really fallen in love with the mid-range jumper. And now, even as a nice stroke from that corner three, which he made one against us, but was really starting to develop at the end of last year. And I think that might have been the worst thing that could have happened to him. I would have gone the other way and just made him a Kenneth Faried type player on the offensive end, where he did off all the dirty work, got all the Kobe assists off of the, you know, off of the Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook drives. But it seems now he's fallen in love with the, you know, being this face up shooter. And while he's way more talented on the offensive end, just skill wise, than when he originally came into the league, I actually think it's hurting the Thunder overall that he's becoming more of a finesse four.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the guy offensively, if I had him on my team, the first thing that I would think of was, this guy has like Amari Stoudemire in the pick and roll kind of potential. He is athletic, can leap out of the gym. He has good hands. He should be able to roll the basket, catch, and finish furiously with Westbrook and with Durant handling next to him. And you're right. He didn't. I think he went to the basket once in this game. And I don't know. Why would you make one of your best athletes be a jump shooter? It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat hurting the team, which, of course, I don't mind. I mean, they brought in a small ball power forward in Ryan Gomes, who could be that guy. But yeah, I really think that he's much scarier to me as a guy rolling to the basket, as a guy who's just relentless on the offensive boards, and that's just not his game. And I will say, we commented almost every time after the Pelicans played OKC last year about how Serge Ibaka just kind of manhandled Anthony Davis, and I didn't find that to be the case in this game. There was actually even a couple times where Ibaka would post up or try to post up against Davis, where Davis would physically push him out, and, you know, mm-hmm. Ibaka would start at 10 feet, you know, from the basket, and Davis would push him out, and he would catch it at 14 or 16. I don't know how much of that is Ibaka and just a lack of ferociousness or how much of it is Anthony Davis just getting stronger, but something to watch for the next time these teams meet in the regular season.
Yep. So let's move to the game in Kentucky with Wizards versus the Pelicans. And of course, even though I am local to the Washington broadcast, they didn't bother to actually go to Kentucky and televise their games. So did you get to see this game?
No, there wasn't a feed. There wasn't a camera in the building that was shooting it, which to me is absolutely insane. I still don't understand it. Somebody has to explain it to me how the NBA doesn't make it mandatory that, you know, the TV contracts that these teams sign with, you know, whoever their affiliate is doesn't include preseason games, because I mean, the Pelicans, for all intents and purposes, are brand new. They're brand new team name, brand new colors, brand new uniforms. But also the team they're putting on the floor is almost completely new. I mean, Drew and Tyreek are new. But really, this fan base has never seen Eric Gordon play for the most part. Anthony Davis is blossoming, no longer a rookie anymore. I don't know why you wouldn't want to get as many eyeballs on this team in the preseason and get fans excited to buy tickets. I can't even imagine, you know, how many people would have bought tickets at this point if they had seen the 6-0 start and able to watch every minute. But there just seems to be no interest in broadcasting these games, and it's just it's mind-blowing to me.
Right. So I do want to open our discussion of this game, though, with a admittance that you were right and I am wrong. So this doesn't happen very often.
But where you say it, or where it's an actuality?
It's an actuality.
Oh, okay.
So Brad Beal, I think you probably remember me not being very high on him at all in the last draft. That I thought he'd be okay at best. Brad Beal, just looking at what he did at the end of last season, what he's been doing now, I mean, this is one of his better games scoring-wise, but he definitely has every single tool you'd want as a shooting guard. And you were high on him, so yes, you were right. I was wrong. Brad Beal is going to be a player.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have been if I wouldn't have watched all the Florida games that year if I would have just looked at the numbers, because there was nothing from the numbers that really said that there was anything special about this guy. But I had watched those Florida games for several years, and they had some of the most selfish guards. I mean, people talk about Ben McLemore and the situation he was in this past year with senior guards and him not taking over, and that was nothing compared to what Beal was put up against at Florida. I think the guy is an absolutely lethal scorer. I thought, I know somebody did an article earlier this year on ESPN where they ranked the 10 best backcourts in the NBA, and somehow the Pelicans weren't on it. But, you know, this John Wall and Brad Beal versus Drew Holiday and a healthy Eric Gordon, I can't think of many backcourts that I would take over either of these.
Yeah. Yeah, John Wall, even though I fully expect that his shooting numbers will regress from what he did over the last month and a half last year, which earned him that monster contract, he's still going to be – he just defensively. Same feeling I have with Drew Holiday. John Wall can't shoot. Drew Holiday doesn't shoot. But John Wall defensively is a monster. And so I fully expect that he and Beal are going to be tearing up some backcourts for some time to come. And if this Wizards team can ever, you know, figure out, you know, how to get a healthy big man, it's going to be pretty scary.
Yeah, and they've honestly invested a lot in this small forward position. I mean, they have a number 6 pick tied up in Jan Vesely. They've got Trevor Ariza, who they needed so bad that they traded away a Rashard Lewis expiring contract for him and Okafor, but they're paying Ariza almost $8 million this year. They're paying Webster almost $6 million, Martell Webster, and they just used the number 3 pick on Otto Porter Jr. and the number 35 pick on Glenn Rice Jr. I mean, they just have, you know, all of these guys at small forward that they've invested in either picks-wise or monetarily, that they're trying to find an answer there. In this game, they started Trevor Ariza, who promptly went 1-for-6 in this game with 3 turnovers. Martell Webster hit 2. He had back-to-back threes at one point to kind of push the Wizards' lead up to 9 before the Pelicans went on a huge run. But, you know, no Otto Porter in this game, no Glenn Rice Jr. in this game. And Vesely really did almost nothing in his first couple minutes, though he did have a pretty big stretch in the fourth where he got 3 consecutive offensive rebounds and blocked one of Anthony Davis's shots from behind. But other than that, you're looking at 0 points in 15 minutes with 4 personal fouls. So, yeah, I mean, that backcourt is very good, but you have big men in the front court who often get injured and small forward that they've invested about, you know, $15 million in this season and, you know, a couple of lottery picks, and you don't know if they have a guy capable of even being an average small forward on the roster.
Yeah, I'm still behind Porter. I fully expect he'll be fine. But you're right. I mean, they have so many sunk costs on this team that it's kind of, you just got to wonder, are they going to continue to make the same mistakes? Because the same people who made the mistakes got these guys, none of these things were surprises. I mean, are you shocked that Nene is injured a lot? I'm not. Mm-hmm. Are you shocked that Trevor Ariza can't score? I mean, these are all things that people knew about these players. So, you know, spending all that money to bring them in, if you're still the same guys around, I think the best thing that could happen for this team is to have them have a disaster opening that forces their owner finally to make a move in the front office.
Yeah, and honestly, if they wouldn't have made that trade for Ariza and Okafor, then Rashard Lewis would have fell off the books this summer, and it would have been before John Wall's extension kicked in. They could have been really aggressive in free agency and paired another very good player with John Wall, Bradley Beal, and then, you know, whoever they would want to take with the 3rd pick. Maybe it was Porter again, or maybe they could have even, you know, packaged the 3rd pick and taken on some salaries of some players who are really good. But because they had those contracts, they didn't really have a lot of flexibility this summer. And now that those contracts are coming off the books next year, that's right when John Wall's extension kicks in. So they're not going to have a ton of flexibility next year either. It was just, I mean, that trade was just, it was so head-scratching for them. No clue why they did it. And I think it might have really prevented them from being able to do something big this summer and really make another leap forward.
Yeah. So, now, here might be your answer why the league is scared of showing these games online or anywhere. But Pelicans, 24 turnovers in this game. And the Wizards had 27 turnovers, so it's not like the Pelicans were alone in their ability to throw the ball into the crowd. And this has been fairly consistent. The Pelicans have been a fairly high turnover team throughout the preseason, but they've never actually been worse than their opponents. So although they have lots of turnovers, their opponents tend to turn it over more. So here's the question for you. When the games actually start and they start mattering, are the Pelicans a high turnover team or not?
I would say that they finish slightly above average, because above average meaning that they, not that they're not in a good way, but they're above average in that they have a couple more turnovers than the average team, only because honestly, I think youth plays a lot into it. I mean, you look at some of the teams that, you know, are up there in turnovers, and you'll see a team like Oklahoma City up there towards the top almost every season. And it's not just fumbling the ball off your hands or making a bad pass. honestly, a lot of them are just sloppy things like guards going before the bigs set up and, you know, and getting an offensive foul on the big for an illegal screen, charges, just playing out of control in different aspects of the game. And I think it'll take a little while to clean that up. I mean, there were 51 turnovers in this game, but there were only 27 fast break points, which tells you it's not, you know, a bunch of just getting your pocket picked and then the guy going the other way for a layup or throwing a bad pass where a guy jumps the lane and has a dunk down on the other end. It's small stuff. It's, you know, like I said, charges, it's illegal screens. It's, you know, a dribble handoff and the guy's still moving. So, you know, I expect those things to come down. I mean, I've seen Chris Paul has already had 3-5+ turnover games in the preseason this year, and he's not even playing that many minutes. So, you know, it's something where teams just are playing a little differently, a little looser, refs swallow their whistle a little bit, and I expect it to come down, but I still expect the Pelicans to be slightly above average this season when it comes to turning the ball over.
So you actually nailed one of my points I was going to bring up. I do have a guy that I play games with who actually went to this game because he is a huge Kentucky fan. And he came out, and the first thing he did when I talked to him later was demand to know where's Darius Miller and what had happened to him. Because he wanted Miller on the floor.
Well, there's one person who actually cares about that. That's good.
I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, you got to watch a game with John Wall and Anthony Davis. First question he asked me is, where's Darius Miller? But he said that he thought Jrue Holiday did an unbelievably good job on John Wall. And the only reason why the Wizards didn't have more than 14 fast break points was because Jrue met Wall every time and managed to wall him off. Yes, Wall. Wall him off from getting to the middle early in every set so that the other team, so that our team had plenty of time to set up their defense. And he says it's not usual that a point guard can do that to John Wall, because of his blazing speed. So if you want to know the answer to the question, at least I feel, of why Monty Williams played Jrue Holiday 36 minutes in that game, despite the fact he had 8 turnovers as well, it's probably because he was actually making John Wall work really hard. So
yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing. I only knew one person who went to this game. But, you know, just looking at the box score, Jrue Holiday, it seemed like it was a personal challenge for him against John Wall. He really got up in this game. I mean, early in the first half, I believe he took 12 field goal attempts. He was really, you know, trying to be more aggressive than we had seen him this preseason. He finished with 19 points, 8 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 steals. Did have the 8 turnovers as well, and without context, I really don't know how to judge him on that. But seems like he really took this as a personal challenge. Maybe it was a, you know, who was the best young point guard in the East last year type of talk between the two of them, and Wall kind of turning it on at the end of last year while Holiday started to fall off, maybe had something to prove. But, you know, it was an impressive overall game for Jrue Holiday. And honestly, on nights like this where Davis is not, you know, getting double-digit rebounds, it's going to have to be other guys that pick up the slack. And we saw Holiday get 8 in this game. Jason Smith got 9. And even good old Anthony Morrow came in with 7 rebounds. And honestly, that's what's going to happen this entire year for the Pelicans to win the rebound battle, is that it can't just be Davis and Aminu. Other guys have to chip in, so it was good to see. I mean, even Austin Rivers had 4 defensive rebounds in just 15 minutes. So it was good to see other guys chipping in on the glass, because I think they're going to have to do that throughout the 82-game season.
Yeah, this is the first game the Pelicans actually won the rebounding battle. That is something that you've brought this up before. It's something that's going to be a struggle for this team because there is no player on this team who has a season under their belt where they're better than average as a defensive rebounder. None of them. Jrue Holiday's never been better than defensive rebounding, even for a point guard. Same with Eric Gordon. Same with Tyreke Evans. He's been, actually that's not true. As a point guard, he's been better, but if he's playing small forward, he's worse than average. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a role that plays on this team and having to do like a gang rebounding thing. I'm not sure if it's going to work out that well, and it might be the weak spot that hurts them at times.
Yeah, and I mean, you gotta pick your poisons. In some games, it won't matter, but in this game, it did. This was the worst that the Pelicans had shot all preseason from the field, only 41%. Weren't really hitting their threes, just seven made threes. Made their free throws, but mostly they, won this game by being able to turn Washington over. Washington did have 27 turnovers. The Pelicans had 12 steals, led by Al-Farouq with four and Jrue Holiday with three. But this honestly is going to happen. This team is not always going to put up 102 to 110 points per game. And there are going to have to be games where they win it on the other end. To me, it sounds like this game was just more sloppy. Even after the game, Anthony Davis came out and said that he was trying to put on a show for the people at Kentucky. I mean, I'm sure they were trying to win, but it sounds like a lot of guys were just trying to put on a show similar to those, off-season all-star games. But still, I think some good things to take away from here. Eric Gordon, again, just 24 minutes. Monty's obviously limiting his minutes, but he gives you 16 points on 11 shots in those 24 minutes. And, so far in this preseason, he's 5 for 9 from three in just two games. So a couple more good signs on the scoring end from Eric Gordon as well.
Yeah, I think this is clearly the most talented team he's ever played on. And it'll be interesting to see how, if he's just the explosive scorer, where every so often he just makes his four-way to the hoop and scores for the team and does that in a limited number of minutes a game, it's going to be fun to watch. So do you want to talk about this next game coming up? There's a lot of excitement about it.
I do. Just one other thing first is because you just see a trend happening in these two games. And I just want to say Tyreke Evans, let's say he comes back, which he will. Hopefully he'll be there for the next game against Miami. So I tell you right now, Tyreke Evans, Anthony Morrow, Jason Smith, Ryan Anderson. Who is the fifth guy on that second unit?
Austin Rivers?
I mean, Brian Roberts, again, I know it's preseason, but, people on my Twitter timeline are starting to nickname him Mariano Rivera because he has closed out almost every preseason game, including these last two, with huge shots. He seems to be playing at least offensively far better than Austin Rivers. Now the minutes are flipping as well. Rivers only got 15 minutes in this last game, while Roberts got 25. Are we 100% sure that Rivers is getting? I mean, is it possible that when healthy, Rivers gets no minutes or, maybe 2-4 minutes a game if Roberts is playing this well?
I mean, it's possible, but, Roberts is – it all depends on what the team needs. I have a feeling. I really think this is going to end up being a defense-offense substitution. And I think that if he needs another guard – to go out there and slow somebody down, Austin Rivers is going to be the choice. And I think if he needs like some just burst scoring, I think Roberts will be the choice. But the lineup that you described just now, that needs a defender more than it needs a scorer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would tend to agree. I also think it needs somebody who doesn't have the ball just stick to their hands the way that we've seen Roberts just, you know, have the ball stick as he dribbles. I don't think Tyreek Evans will like that too much if Roberts is killing the clock while Evans is just waiting on the wing to isolate. It's interesting. Roberts has definitely outplayed Rivers by a pretty wide margin, at least offensively, so far in the preseason. He's obviously older, a little bit more seasoned, not prone to as many huge mistakes as Rivers. I think Rivers gives them obviously a much better defender and a guy who is, you know, willing to play offensively without the ball in his hands and be fine with it. I think it's an interesting thing to watch. I think by the way they've been playing, and especially the way that Roberts has been hitting big shots in these preseason games, I think it's really hard for Monty Williams to go into the season and you know, say that Roberts, you're my 11th man now that everybody's healthy, sit on the bench if I need you. I'll call while, you know, you have Austin Rivers running out there who has struggled to say the least. So just something interesting to watch for over these last couple games, because if you see at the start of the preseason, their minutes were pretty similar and Rivers was even getting a couple more, and now it's gone the other way where Monty seems to trust Roberts a little more, especially late in games. So.
Yeah, I will say this either way. I don't think it's going to be a disaster either way. I don't expect either of these guys to get monster minutes. I don't whichever one plays, which it's fine with me. Which, you know, I probably wouldn't have said that normally.
Yeah,
I know you have like a really aesthetic issue with Roberts at times, and I do too sometimes. But
I love him if he's an off the ball spot up shooter. But yeah, I think. If Tyreek is saying that I'm going to go to the bench and, you know, I'm fine coming off the bench as long as I'm the main man on the bench and playing the Manu Ginobili role, I just don't see Roberts as the guy to put on the court with him, because Roberts just loves having the ball in his hands, and oftentimes when he has it, it sticks. So I don't see him... you know, if he's the same old Brian Roberts, if he's just spotting up off of Tyreek Evans's penetration, then I definitely think that could work.
Yeah. So next game in New Orleans, LeBron James and the Miami Heat are coming to town.
And it's a real home game. It's not in Biloxi or Lexington.
Right.
Nothing wrong with any of those places, but this is an actual real home game in New Orleans, in the New Orleans Arena, with the new upgrades they've made to the arena and the brand new court that actually says Pelicans on it.
So last game, LeBron James did not play. Greg Oden didn't play. Ray Allen didn't play. They went against the Spurs and they won 121-96. Of course, the Spurs major players, none of them played more than 20 minutes. So what do you expect from this game? Do you think that LeBron's going to play and we're going to see a real game? Or do you think the Heat are just taking this way lighter than the Pelicans are and Pelicans are going to win again?
I mean, I don't think anybody on the Heat will play 30 minutes or more. I definitely don't think we'll see Greg Oden. I don't even know if Oden will play in the 2013 calendar year. But
right.
I think you'll see at least two of the big three from Miami, if not all three. To me, it really wouldn't matter. This is the only preseason game in New Orleans. This is the chance to be in the building for the first, you know, time ever where these new upgrades are there, the new court's there. The announcers saying Pelican, I just think that the crowd should be so pumped up. And I don't know how important the undefeated season is. On one hand, history says there's never been an undefeated team in the preseason that didn't make the playoffs. Now, obviously, that's more correlation than causation. There's nothing there that if you go undefeated in the preseason, you're automatically going to make the playoffs. But, you know, as much as these first six games have been a boost to the confidence and just getting, you know, used to winning and playing together, I definitely don't think it would hurt to go and beat the two-time defending champions in your arena in the first and only preseason game played there this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I was a young team and I was playing this well in the preseason and I came up against the Miami Heat and they come in and they stomp on you, that pretty much negates the preseason for you. As far as confidence goes, that's how I would feel at least. Like, yeah, we were beating these teams, but it's preseason. These are nonsense games. Miami came in. Obviously, they're not going to be trying hard, and they just kicked the crap out of us. So I think there is a little bit of harm if the Pelicans don't at least make a good showing out of this game, because they need the confidence. This is, you've mentioned it before. They open with an easy schedule. They have to take advantage of it, or they're screwed.
Yeah, I think you're looking at it through your glasses. I think people do this a lot. And you would only, I mean, the more you meet, and it's not like I've met a ton, but I've met my fair share of professional athletes, you have no idea how delusional they are. Like, I mean, they have to be. They have to be delusional in order to have the confidence to make it where they made it. I'm telling you, even if the Pelicans lose this game by 24, their players will tell themselves, oh, we were distracted because we were too amped up by the crowd and we were trying to play for them instead of doing our own thing. Or it was our first time we ever seen the courts. The lights were this, that. They don't think the way you and I think about them. They don't see these things as a sign, or they wouldn't be brought down back to earth. Professional athletes are so ridiculously delusional. Basically because they have to be, that it wouldn't do anything personally to their psyche, in my opinion. What it might do is give Monty Williams a little bit more fuel and a little bit more evidence to really work them harder the next couple of weeks, and, you know, while he still has them before this schedule becomes insane. But I don't think a preseason game, regardless of the result, really does anything to a professional player's psyche.
Okay.
They're crazy.
All right.
They should be. I
would argue with you.
I think this is more for the fans. I really think the fans should just go out and have a crazy time, just really enjoy it. And, you know, for a lot of fans who, you know, don't want to spend their time trying to find streams on the internet, and obviously there's only been three games that were even broadcast anywhere. You know, for a lot of fans, this might be the first time they get to see the Pelicans at all this preseason. And now that Jason Smith is back, which honestly I was starting to get a little bit more worried about, as the Pelicans were saying that he was out indefinitely. We had heard that before.
Yeah.
You know, to see him come back in that Wizards game and really play all out, grab 9 rebounds, play, I think it was either 22 or 24 minutes. I fully expect Tyreke Evans to be back for this game on Wednesday, and that means you're looking at a fully healthy new Pelican squad for the first time since they'll put all these pieces together.
Yeah, that'll be nice. So I have one question for you, though. Against the Heat, should we be afraid of the revenge of Roger Mason?
Oof. I mean, he's coming in fierce. You know that, I mean, honestly, I think he actually is playing for a contract on that team. So, I think that, if the past holds up, you know, Roger Mason's going to hit a couple of threes against us. Rashard Lewis might as well, even though he never officially played a game for us. What I want to see, and what's been interesting to me in these past couple games, you want to talk about playing offense, defense. Have you noticed who the Pelicans have been putting in as their other forward when they need a defensive stop?
No.
Lance Thomas. And he's a guy that, I mean, if you want to talk about these hybrid small forward slash power forward guys like LeBron James. Again, obviously nobody could stop him, but I'm curious to see if in close games or in games where the Pelicans need to stop, you know, because, yeah, I mean, I think about it. Who would you really put in? You're not going to put Steamsma in late in games for any reason whatsoever, even if you get, like, 4 bonus points for having a guy with 2 S's in his last name on the court. I still wouldn't put him in. So you're not going to have Steamsma out there. You're not going to have Ryan Anderson out there in defensive situations. I think it comes down to if a team is fairly big, you might have Jason Smith out there, or if they're fairly small ball, the way that the Heat play a lot with 1 in and 4 out, you might be looking at Lance Thomas getting minutes late. So just something interesting to watch for as LeBron James and maybe even the immortal Michael Beasley might be go-to guys late in this game.
Yeah, and of course Michael Beasley is such a delight to watch as a basketball player, maybe for the other team. Anyways, thanks for listening to In the Know. We will be back in just a couple days with the spots 9 through 15 of the Western Conference, those teams we think are going to miss the playoffs. And we'll talk about each team in depth, so come back to listen to that. Thanks.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.